Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the NXpress Nintendo Podcast. My name is Patrick. I'll be your temporary host again, although, you know, that temporary thing is becoming much more regular. But anyway, splitting duties with Tim right now, who is a new father and, you know, has other responsibilities, supposedly. Joining me, however, today is Ricky D. Welcome back to the podcast.
What's up, Patrick Murphy? What's up, Nintendo Nation? It is good to be back. I've been busy. I'm sorry I missed the podcast. I have stories to tell. But yeah, it's good to be back.
Well, you've watched like a billion movies over the past few weeks, so that's kind of a good reason to not be on the podcast. And again, welcoming back Isaac Barnett.
Hey, good to be back again.
Yeah, you also watched two movies, I hear.
Yeah, I watched two movies over like 3 weeks. That's like a record for me. I'm not much of a movie person, so
I watched 55.
There you go.
All right, I know at least a lot of the movies that Rick saw because I read the reviews, which you can see on Goombastomp.com. They're part of our Fantasia Film Festival coverage, which was enormous, by the way. Anybody who wants to know what kind of like horror and thriller and, you know, all sorts of movies out there, check out Goombastomp because we got a crazy ton of reviews, probably more than anybody else. But Isaac, what did you see? I need to know.
I've been going through the Ghibli backlog, and so I saw Castle in the Sky, as well as Nausicaä Valley of the Wind, which I really liked. Just like the first Ghibli movie, even though it wasn't a Ghibli movie because the studio hadn't been formed yet. I watched that in Castle in the Sky, and I really enjoyed it. I've always been a big Ghibli fan, but I've never had like the ability to sit down and watch them through because they're not on any streaming platforms or anything. They're like disc only, and I'm too cheap to buy them, so I just went to my library, rented them, and watched them. So,
did you ever watch Princess Mononoke?
I have not yet. It's not the library, and I might have to consider buying a set to watch that. I've heard it's the best one, like by far.
It is my personal favorite. It's funny because I started watching a lot of anime because I want to start writing for the anime section over on the website, and it is probably my fifth favorite anime of all time. I actually just watched my second favorite anime of all time yesterday, Perfect Blue. So yeah, me too. I'm watching a lot of anime these days.
Yeah.
You know, I don't watch animated movies anymore at all. In fact, I've never seen a Studio Ghibli movie. I think I've been close to seeing one once, and which is, you know, I have an animator friend, a guy he's worked in video games for years as an animator, and he even worked on the original Angry Birds movie for like 2 weeks, I think. but he, you know, I used to occasionally go to an animated movie with him, but I think the Lego movie was honestly the last animated movie I saw, and I had not seen... I used to watch the Pixar ones. I used to watch, you know, other stuff that came along. I really did used to like hand-drawn animation, but for some reason over the last 10 years or so, my taste for it has kind of gone away.
I've always wanted them to make a video game based on Perfect Blue. Like, I don't know if you, I guess you've never seen it, right, Patrick?
No.
Isaac, I don't think it's your kind of movie because it's a little dark and twisted.
Oh, it's definitely not then.
Yeah, for sure. It is, in my opinion... maybe perhaps the best slasher film ever made and the second best anime ever made. It's really, really good. But I think it'll make a wicked video game. Moving away from movie talk, let's get to Nintendo. I need to know, Isaac, because you're like our go-to Smash guy. So what's going on in the world of Super Smash Brothers? I hear there's a lot of controversy. I hear there's some petitions happening. I hear like Hiro is great. I hear he's like terrible.
Yeah, well, from what I've seen, because I actually haven't had a lot of time to play around with the Hiro yet, from what I've seen, it's like a really RNG-heavy character, and so there's a lot of potential for moves and stuff that might feel unfair because of the way his magic system works. When you're playing a match, it's like ways for him to like KO you halfway across the screen and stuff like that.
But isn't it sort of like when you press like down B, you don't know which of his magical moves you can get, of which some of them actually kill your character?
Yes. Yeah, Kamikaze is one of them that just blows him up and obviously does some damage, too, to the other character. But that's like, it's completely random. You get, I think, between 1 to 4 choices when you hit down B. And it is random picks. You can get some really powerful moves. You can get some that aren't so great. And that's what makes it kind of interesting. I think it's interesting, but there's always going to be the argument that especially with heavily RNG-based fighters like that, that you really don't want it like that because it could be either really unfair for the person who's playing Hiro or really unfair for the person who's playing against him. And so, you know, I mean, I personally have no problem with it as long as the character is designed properly around RNG. Like I said, I don't have much experience with Hiro yet. I haven't bought the DLC yet. I've been super packed, but I will, you know, eventually get in there and see, you know, what he's like personally. But when I've seen all the footage and everything, sometimes it looks extremely broken, and other times it looks like you can be beat pretty easily. So I mean, it's like it's anything in Smash Brothers. There's counterplay to it, and the only time the character differences are going to matter is when the top tier players get a hold of it. Otherwise, you know, I mean, most of the time you'll be fine playing against them if you just step up your game.
But I would assume that if you were to choose that character in a tournament and you were to press, say, down B, you're taking a giant risk because you can just accidentally kill yourself.
Well, I mean, from what I understand, I don't think it's automatic because you get to pick from a list of like the four different moves or whatever. And so usually it'll be one of the three moves on there, one of the four moves on there. But yes, if you miss input, you can kill yourself with it. And maybe sometimes it would be a strategy. I mean, if you're a stock ahead, the opponent's at KO percentage, and you want to use Kamikaze, it might be a good move. It's the same thing as, for example, I'm Ganondorf main. He's got a move we call Ganon Side, where he just choke slam somebody off the side of the stage. It's a great move when you're about one stock ahead. I mean, it's excellent. Your opponent has to play around it and everything, and that's kind of what that falls into. But yeah, I mean, I've saw it on Reddit already. Somebody did that and just completely lost the match because they blew themselves up by accident. but the character looks really well designed. I'm really impressed with what they've been able to do in terms of. Like the series tradition, everything they incorporated into it looks really good. You know, Sakurai always designs characters pretty well, very well, and this one looks to be no exception.
So the character is overpowered, but is this going to be a situation kind of like Bayonetta? When Bayonetta came out, everyone was in an uproar because she was so powerful, but then they nerfed her, and it equaled like the playing ground.
Well, to be honest, in Smash 4, they never nerfed her hard enough. She was always completely overpowered. Her and Cloud both. And even in doubles matches, Cloud was so overpowered that eventually they banned him altogether from double matches. No, I don't think this is a... From what I can tell, obviously I'm not an expert, I haven't been in on this a lot. But this is not a Bayonetta situation, because Bayonetta was in a completely different league than most of the other Smash characters in Smash 4. At least when the top-tier Smash players got a hold of it. Like I said, for your average Smash player, somebody like, better than me or something like that, or myself even, it's going to be a situation where if you're playing the character you like, it doesn't really matter what the character difference is at that sort of level.
How can you ban the character? It is discrimination. You can't just ban a
character. Well, I mean, like, for example, like...
Well, no, because, like, I'm just joking around, but, like, hear me out. So, like, say a UFC fighter walks into the ring and he wants to fight for the heavyweight title, right? They're not going to ban him just because he happens to be, like, 7 feet tall and 300 pounds and 4% body weight and is a master of jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? Like if you're going into a tournament, especially a fighting tournament, it doesn't make sense to me that they would ban specific characters that are made for that specific game. If you're good enough to win, then you're good enough to win no matter who you choose, and you should be able to beat he or she character.
Wait, that analogy, though, doesn't work if you consider the fact that each fighter has to come into a certain weight. Like, you don't have a fighter from one class fighting a fighter from another class, because that weight and arm length, like your height, weight, and arm length makes a huge difference. And so that's why fighters have to weigh in, and they have to be within a very, very strict weight limit, so that they're both almost exactly the same size. So that's, I think, what people are talking about when they don't want Smash characters to be overpowered. It's like fighting somebody in another class. You wouldn't put a welterweight up against a heavyweight.
I'll put it this way.
Why don't they have classes? Like, why isn't there like a lightweight and a middleweight and a heavyweight?
Well, I'll put it this way. They do have sometimes low tier tournaments, which are a lot of fun. The pro players actually play with low tier characters and have fun with that. But in general, that is only one of two bans that's ever happened in Smash history when it comes to characters. The first one was a proposed, implemented, and then repealed ban on Meta Knight back in Brawl. And Meta Knight was by far, in Super Smash Bros. Brawl, the most broken character that has ever existed in any Smash game. He was so powerful that there was no mismatch for him. So every single character he had an advantage over, except for playing against another Meta Knight. And the problem was that the tournaments devolved into everybody playing Meta Knight and maybe one or two people playing Snake, and they just kind of fell apart. So people were like, okay, let's try banning him. Eventually, it came together where not everybody was playing Meta Knight, but for the most part, it killed a lot of the Brawl competitive scene because of how overpowered he was. And that's the same thing happened with Bayonetta in Smash 4, and that's why people banned Cloud in doubles, was because it got to such a degree where there were literally, the top match would be two Clouds and two Clouds fighting against each other, and just be nothing but Clouds on teams fighting. And it's kind of boring to watch. It makes the meta go stale. And I mean, there's something to say with that. And it's different in games like, for example, I play a lot of Overwatch. In Overwatch, they balance the characters so well, for the most part, or they at least consistently balance them, where if someone's overpowered, it's only overpowered for a season or two. In Smash, they don't patch well at all, if at all, characters. So there's some characters that are broken and remain broken, and some characters that get better or get some slight buffs. But generally, you know, the community has to react because of how Nintendo's lack of patching stuff correctly.
I don't know, but, man. I mean, if we were in a wrestling match, a tag team wrestling match, and I chose Brock Lesnar as my tag team partner, and you showed up with Peter Dinklage, and you got your ass kicked, I'd be like, well, it's your fault. Like, you know, lost.
That would have been scripted in advance anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, though, for people, anybody below the very top layer of professional players, it does not matter what character you pick. I mean, there's one guy who's so good with Ganondorf, and he goes to these tournaments, and he does really well with them. And, you know, it doesn't really matter below the very top, maybe 100 players in the country, what character you pick. You can still do very well with them. Now, it's going to be harder. Like, if you want to be good with, like, one of the worst characters in Smash Ultimate, it'll take a lot more work. But you can still go in and just destroy everybody with them, right?
What if they put a spin on it and the so-called world-class champions, they are forced to play with the lowest-tier character in a tournament?
Well, I mean, they would still, like, most of the time in their local tournaments, they would still just destroy people. And even if, let's just say, that's why I said they have those low-tier tournaments only, which are a lot of fun. The people still do really good at them, because people who are good at Smash at a high level are good with pretty much every character, because they're good at the fundamentals, they're good at reading their opponent, they're good at everything that, you know, it's character independent, and that's why they're able to swap and stuff. There are some people that are kind of one-trick characters. You play one character, you know, extensively and really get in there, but for the most part, you know, most people can play most characters very well. I mean, and even, like I said, the best players in the world can play every character on the roster at a level that's insane. I mean, so honestly, it doesn't matter. But in general, bans are only considered when something goes really, really wrong. Like I said, Meta Knight in Smash Bros. Brawl, or like Bayonetta in Smash 4. There was a ban considered but never implemented here in the States, and Cloud in Smash 4 Doubles. But generally, it is not needed.
One last quick question. Did you watch EVO?
I did not. I don't watch much competitive Smash, to be honest, because of like time constraints and stuff. But I don't know. Everybody said it was good.
I'm still shocked that so many people watch these video game tournaments, because I just can't get into them, even though I play video games. Like, I know it's like, it's kind of like hypocritical of me, and it's weird because I watch like sports, like basketball and hockey and whatnot on TV.
Yeah.
But to me, it just seems, I don't know, it seems different. It's like, I just can't, I don't know about you guys, I just can't get into it. I tried. Rocket League was probably the most fun I had watching a tournament, but I watched like maybe like 20 minutes of the finale, like the final, and that was it.
The problem is it's hard for me to get into like the lingo of it all, and I mean, if it's hard for us, or where we are very experienced gamers, I can't imagine how hard it is for the general population. Because for basketball, you might not understand all the dynamics and the subtleties of it, but you can generally get the idea of what you're supposed to do, you know, within 5 minutes of watching it. You know, okay, oh, you know, they got to shoot the ball and make the most points. Whoever has the most points wins. You know, the technicalities and rules and stuff take longer to pick up. But in games like, I've watched a lot of, you know, Overwatch League, you know, professional Overwatch, and it's kind of hard to follow. The games like that are hard to follow on screen just because of how much stuff's going on. These players are reacting in terms of, you know, milliseconds to stuff that's going on screen. There's communication that you can't hear, you know, strategies and stuff. And honestly, the broadcasting level just hasn't reached the level of stuff like the NBA, right? You don't have people who have been commenting on Overwatch games for 30 years like you do in the NBA.
There's also the problem that they need about, you know, 10 different camera angles or whatever to catch what's actually going on. Whereas for a sports game, they can always switch to one camera angle that tells you exactly what's going on. It's a much more confined thing. That's a problem with the telecast. I've never gotten into esports because honestly, I think there's something, athletics to me are just much more impressive. Like, I don't mean to denigrate esports. I don't particularly even consider it sport. Video games are games, and they're just playing competitive gaming, as far as I'm concerned. I think sports require a bit of athleticism, and there isn't really, I'm sorry, but button pushing and just stamina isn't athleticism necessarily. I think this is my definition of sports, but I believe that a certain amount of athleticism is required. And I find it far more interesting and far more impressive to watch athletes do something that I know that nowhere, there is absolutely no chance in the world that I can perform the feats that they are doing. So I'm watching people do things that I know in my, you know, I know 100% I cannot do what those basketball players are doing. I cannot do what those football players are doing.
Do you consider pool a sport?
I consider billiards a game as well. I know bowling? It's on ESPN, but I just don't consider it a sport.
I mean, the way I
don't consider darts a sport. I consider that a game. It's
Do you consider baseball a sport?
absolutely. That's athletic. There's running, there's diving, there's throwing, there's hit it swinging. That's athletic. That's like tennis. There's an athletic component. There's not an athletic component to sitting in a chair and pushing buttons. I realize that it could be hard on your body because you're under stress and you're sitting for a long time and there's carpal tunnel syndrome to worry about. But I really don't mean to make fun of it. I just think this is my personal take on the whole thing. That's why I'm not really interested in watching somebody else push buttons and having and watching this character that isn't real perform feats. I just don't really think of that as entertaining. I would much rather watch a live person, a human being, perform incredible feats. I can still be impressed by a game of billiards,
I'll put it this way. When I watch somebody play Pro Overwatch, I know there's no way in the world I could ever be that good at it. Because they put in some of the Korean players, it's not unlikely that they practice 10 to 12 hours a day playing the game.
Isaac, there's the difference. I don't care how long I practice, I will never, ever, ever be able to slam dunk an NBA game. It doesn't matter how much time I put in. And that, to me, is the big difference. I'm watching human beings perform feats that I could never do. I do believe that if I put in as much time, or it may not be true, whether it's true or not, whether I possess the reflexes or they have superior reflexes or not, when I watch what's going on in an esports match, I can imagine myself doing that if I had 12 hours a day to devote to that. I can see myself doing it. I don't see the impediment is time to me, not necessarily physical ability. So when I watch sports, I'm watching people whose physical abilities are so far beyond my own that it wouldn't matter how long I practiced. I could never catch up.
Yeah, so like when I watch a few Smash tournaments on like YouTube and stuff, what I like about it, I should say that I actually do enjoy watching it live because at Montreal Comic Con, which happens like in the summertime in July, right before the Fantasia Film Festival, there's a 3-day event and I always have a Super Smash Brothers tournament. Usually it's Melee. And I do like being in the crowd, like watching it live, because they're so like everyone's so excited and you feel the energy, and it's just great to be out and surrounded by these people who also love Nintendo games, especially Smash, right? But when I watch it on YouTube, which is not very often, the reason why I watch it is because I just want to see how someone pulls off a certain move or what they do, because then I can learn from it. It's no different than when I used to go to the arcade as a kid and play Mortal Kombat and or Street Fighter, and then you watch someone else pull off a combo or a specific move that you didn't know existed, and then you learn just by observing. So I kind of understand that people would want to watch because they can also learn how to be better players. But to me, I just personally can't see myself sitting down for like 2 or 3 hours watching like the Fortnite tournament, for example, which had like a gazillion people watching it.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we're going to discuss a list that is about to appear on GoombaStomp.com, if it has not yet already, of the greatest games of the last 3 decades. We'll be back in a bit. All right, we are back, and we're going to talk about the list of the greatest games of the past 30 years. We've compiled a list voted on by the staff at GoombaStomp.com. It's went through a rigorous nomination process and then another voting process, a round of voting on top of that, and we have come up with our list of the single best game for each of the last 30 years. So, starting with 1990, I believe, right? So wait, it's not quite 30 years. Am I right about that, Rick?
So what we're going to be doing each and every single decade. I mean, basically, we really just got the 80s left to do, which we're going to do later in the year. But we did 1990 to obviously 2000, and then 2000 to 2010, and then 2010 to 2020. By the way, I just have to say, listeners, if you hear me cough or whatnot, it's because I've been sick for like 3 weeks, so I apologize. So we're going to go through the list really quick, but the idea is to really just focus on Nintendo because we are a Nintendo podcast. We do not need to argue about what Xbox or PlayStation games should have or should have not made the list. Yeah, like, I mean, let's start with 1990. So it's funny because for 1990, 91, and 92, I told our editor, Mike Werby, who's been on the podcast several times, he helped us organize this list. I told him, like, I guarantee you that I already know who won. It's no competition. And sure enough, like, everyone voted for the exact same nominees, and they're all Nintendo games, and I think you know what they are. I think there's only two people who voted for Sonic, but 1990, the winner was Super Mario Bros. 3. 1991, the winner was Super Mario World. 1992, the winner was The Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past. And I knew, just by knowing our website and our writers, that those three games would hands down win, because they're like, if we made a list of the 100 best games ever made, they would be probably on the top 20, if not 25 or 10, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the only one I can see competing is in 1991, possibly Street Fighter II. That's the only one that I could see being as iconic as those other games.
I mean, Final Fantasy IV was really good, too.
It was good, but it was not as iconic as VI. So,
but I'm talking about for the time, right?
Street Fighter II is iconic, and it's the only one I could see going up against Super Mario World. That's.
I wanted to vote for Street Fighter II, to be totally honest with you, but I just, like, for whatever reason, I just went with Super Mario World. But like, I think for me, like, Street Fighter 2 was my favorite game back in, you know, when I was a kid, like going to the arcade. I wrote this big, huge article about it. We did a whole entire special on Street Fighter, like looking through the archives of the NX Rest podcast. I totally agree with you. I think Street Fighter 2 is it's hard though, because like this is like 1991. I was really torn between Street Fighter 2 and Super Mario World, and I think the only reason why I voted for Super Mario World was just because I knew it was gonna win. So I was like, whatever, like I'll just vote for it, which is like stupid reason to like.
It's also the best 2D Mario game.
Yes,
Rick likes Super Mario 3.
My favorite Mario game of all time, I think, is Super Mario Bros. 3, hands down. Period. Yeah. I think it's the best game. I think there's not a flaw to it. I think it's tight and like beautifully constructed, and for its time, it was like ahead of its time. You know, some people argue Galaxy, which is fine, or Super Mario 64. But when you look at 1990, like there is competition, but I mean,
it's not strong.
Not really.
Like Mega Man 3, Metal Gear 2, Ninja Gaiden 2, The Secret of Monkey Island, and Star Tropics. It's a no-brainer. It's Super Mario Bros. 3. Yeah. And then when you... And by the way, we're going by North American releases. And when you look at 1992, again, like, for me, it's a no-brainer. Like, I know there's a few people who voted for Sonic the Hedgehog 2, but... And it's interesting, because The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past won, but when I was growing up, it was like half of my friends owned Sega Genesis, or Sega whatever Sega system it was at the time, and then the rest of us own Nintendo systems.
Now 92 though did have a strong year, because you have Super Mario Kart, which is obviously, you know, well, it's not the greatest game in the world, but it did start the franchise. Wolfenstein 3D is kind of iconic, although Doom was really when it came into its own. So but it was still pretty revolutionary at the time. I have a soft spot for Contra 3D Alien Wars. I think that is possibly the greatest action game I've ever played. Just like, it continues to wow me. I think that like people need to look at that game. Metal Slug obviously has some great action as well from that era, but I still think Contra 3D Alien Wars did it the best.
Yeah, Contra 3D Alien Wars is probably my second favorite game on this list, but Link to the Past, hands down, I think it's the best, yep. And by yep. far my favorite. So those first 3 years, Nintendo dominated, at least according to the writers over at Goombasump.com, and I guess the editors, the writers and editors, the crew, the staff. The first 3 years, we all chose Nintendo games. They are the winners. By the way, you can find this list over at Goombastomp.com. It will be separated into three posts, the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. 1994 was tricky. It was really tricky. You know what I voted for.
I'm going to assume you voted for Donkey Kong Country.
No,
Super Metroid, of course. We all voted for Super Metroid.
Yeah, Super Metroid,
did anybody
for sure.
Not? There may have been a few Final Fantasy VI people.
Yeah,
but
Final Fantasy VI is iconic. It's no Super Metroid, though.
But here's a problem. My three favorite games of all time is A Link to the Past, Super Metroid, and Earthbound. And I'm not going to say that Earthbound's a better game than Super Metroid, but it's probably like one of my favorite games of all time. And so it was really hard for me to choose. And then you have Donkey Kong Country. But I also prefer Donkey Kong Country 2 over Donkey Kong Country. So this one, to me, like, 94 was the hardest for me to choose from. I mean, you had, I sort of was going back and forth between Street Fighter and Super Mario World. But 94, it was really hard. And I just, like, again, once again, I just gave up on Earthbound. I was like, it's not going to win. So I was like, I put my vote for Super Metroid just in case Final Fantasy took, like, the surprise win.
It did get some votes, yeah. though. Earthbound yeah, got some did. Votes. I didn't waver. I mean, I loved Earthbound, but I don't have the nostalgia for it that you do, because I only played it first, you know, like 3 years ago. I did waver for a second with Final Fantasy VI, because I do consider that to be the pinnacle of RPGs myself. So I did waver with that, but Super Metroid ultimately is just too good of a game.
Yeah, I didn't even consider Final Fantasy VI. Obviously, it's not my favorite Final Fantasy. I think it has a weak second half of the game. That depends, like, depends on who best. You ask. I love the first half of the game, and I thought the second half of the game was just completely off the rails. I couldn't stand it. That's just a personal perspective on it. But
you know, Super Metroid,
what's that?
It's great that I can count. Like, I completely skipped 93.
Yeah. Well, to be fair,
I thought you were going right to the Nintendo ones.
Yeah,
there wasn't
I thought that's
much
what you were
Nintendo.
Doing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, 93. I mean, the game is available on Nintendo right now.
I guess so.
Yeah.
So
true.
Like, so basically, 1993, Doom 1. Which is interesting. I believe I voted for Mega Man X, which Doom is like so iconic, and it was groundbreaking, and it sort of made first person shooters like really popular. So I understand why Doom won. My heart was with Mega Man X, but at the same time, there was Mortal Kombat 2 to choose from. There was Myst, there was Secret of Mana, and there was Star Fox. I can tell you right now, the Star Fox, Secret of Mana, and Myst, I would never vote for those games. I think they're great, but I don't think they can compare to Mega Man X, Mortal Kombat 2, and Doom in terms of like how they stand the test of time. But yeah, Doom basically won 1993, and the reason why I mention this is because, yeah, we're supposed to focus on Nintendo games, but the Doom collection was released on the Nintendo Switch, and you can play all of the games.
Doom was on the Super Nintendo as well.
Right, it was. And that was like way later after like the PC release,
though. Yeah, that's one of those few games that actually used the Super FX chip 2, I think, and so it's like a really, really graphically impressive game. For the Super Nintendo, at least.
So far, technically, Nintendo's still dominating, because you could have played Doom, like you said, on the Super Nintendo back in the days.
Yeah.
So 1995, I believe is next, right, guys?
Yeah, 95, I had an accidental vote. I accidentally voted for Yoshi's Island. I didn't see Chrono Trigger on that list. I was like, I totally
you're one of the three.
Yep, I totally would have voted for Chrono Trigger had I seen it on the list, because it is a way better game than anything else on the list here. It's a classic. It's my second favorite RPG of all time, and I think it's a pinnacle of 2D traditional JRPGs.
So, for me, it was no contest. Chrono Trigger, hands down. I mean, I would have loved to seen Donkey Kong Country 2 get some sort of like win, if only it had been released a year later. But actually, not even, because a year later is only better to came out. But yeah, again, Nintendo dominates, man. And it's not just that Chrono Trigger 1, which was released on a Super Nintendo. If you look at the nominees, there's Donkey Kong Country 2 on the list and Yoshi's Island. So like, we're still in the 90s, but when it comes down to the nominees, like, there's always at least like 3 out of the 6 that were released specifically and exclusively on Nintendo consoles.
Yeah, that will start to change when the N64 comes around. The Super Nintendo, at least it had a quantity that you could always be assured that there was something awesome to play every single year.
Yeah, 64,
that will start to change, yeah.
So 1996, no surprise, once again, Nintendo wins with Super Mario 64. And there was 3 games released exclusively for Nintendo consoles. Once again, nominated Mario Kart 64. And
Pokemon
Red and Blue.
Now, I am shocked at how many votes Pokemon Red and Blue got. I know that a lot of people love that game, and when it came out, it was like a big deal and everything like that. But to call it like the best game of the year, I don't find it to be that great. I could only make it about halfway through. I get that people love it, but when you actually look at its design, is it really that great? I don't know. I mean, Mario Kart 64 I would have had as my second one, because that was just, I think that's still the most perfect Mario Kart that's ever been, as far as the balance between racing and battle. So,
but you see, I take an issue with this, because the thing is, like I said, I voted for Super Metroid, even though Earthbound is my favorite game of all time, just based on nostalgia and, you know, the fact that I have such a long history with that game. I've completed it like 3 times over the years, but Super Metroid's the better game. And when you look at this list, like, how do you put Pokemon Red and Blue over Super Mario 64?
I don't know. That's
pure
nostalgia.
You should not be judging it based on what was your favorite game at the time. It should be based on what is the best game of the year. Yeah. And, of course, there's a lot of things that factor into this, like, does it stand the test of time? How advanced was it for when it came out? How great was it back in 1996? How good is it now? Like Super Mario 64 was groundbreaking. I mean, how do you put Pokemon over Mario 64?
I will argue that Super Mario 64 is not aged all that well of its design and in terms of it.
It's aged, like, okay, so we did a whole entire Super Mario spotlight, I think it was like 2 years ago, where we played every single Mario game, and I played every single Mario game and finished each and every single one of those games from start to finish. And despite the fact that the camera still to this day drives me nuts, the game is still playable and enjoyable and entertaining and still a great game. Yes, it has its flaws, but it's still an amazing game. Pokemon Red and Blue...
Like, it's not amazing.
No, it's not. Anymore.
I can't comment. I've never played it, so I can't comment.
It's just a very, I don't know, it's very basic. And Super Mario 64, it's still fun to run around as Mario in that game. Yeah, like Rick said, the camera is a problem. It's always a problem in 3D games, really. But it's, you know, it's gotten better, but it was bad back then. But it was workable, and it's still fun to play him. And the levels are designed really, really, really well. I just don't think you can say there's anything outstanding in the design of Pokemon Red and Blue. It should be pointed out, somebody also voted for Resident Evil, which has appeared in Nintendo consoles, so that is for a game. That was an interesting choice, I thought. I mean, certainly the start of an impactful series, but I'm not sure that the original Resident Evil for PlayStation could be best of the year, but maybe.
I mean, it's possible if someone doesn't like platformers, and so they voted for survival horror thriller, which is Resident Evil. I mean, that makes sense in my head. I just don't understand Pokemon votes. Like, I just don't understand why anyone voted for Pokemon over Super Mario 64. But anyways, once again, Nintendo wins, and that brings us to 1997, where Nintendo, for the first time in our list, does not win. Although, I would argue...
GoldenEye did.
And I would argue that maybe GoldenEye should have won, even though I voted for Castlevania.
Absolutely
not. I voted for GoldenEye. I voted for... Because I think that year, it still was the best game of the year. And personally, I'm not a huge fan of Symphony of the Night. To tell you the truth, I just can't get into it. I've tried a couple of times to pick it up, and I just, you know, whatever. I don't have any nostalgia for it. I came to it a little bit later. But yeah, I honestly think the amount, what GoldenEye was back then. Now, you have to take a lot of things into account. Obviously, GoldenEye does not hold up today. But, however, man, was it. It was. It drove console shooters. Like, that is the game that basically told developers you can make console shooters.
But here's the thing. So GoldenEye was groundbreaking. It, like you said, it put, like, these first person shooters and made them popular and doable and playable on consoles, and you had the multiplayer mode where you could play with like four people. So at the time, it was just like mind blowing. But GoldenEye is so iconic. Like, I was watching a TV special the other day, and they were referencing games from the 90s, and GoldenEye was the first game that popped up. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those games that everyone talks about, and I kind of feel like GoldenEye should have taken this win.
I will say I voted for Final Fantasy VII because I really feel like it's still probably the most iconic Final Fantasy game, and I just feel like it was... I mean, I never played Symphony of the Night or GoldenEye or anything else on this list besides Final Fantasy VII, so there's not much reference for me, but I just really think that game holds up today, not graphically and not story-wise, but in terms of the actual gameplay, it's really addictive and really fun.
I think because Castlevania won Symphony of the Night, this is sort of like the big surprise so far. I really thought Final Fantasy VII was going
to
win.
So did I tell you. I thought we had more Final Fantasy like fanatics on the website than Castlevania fans. I knew GoldenEye would never take it, but I still had to vote for it.
Well, even on this list, if you can play Final Fantasy on Nintendo Switch and GoldenEye, if you still have a 64, you can play it. So there's... And Tekken 3... Wasn't Tekken 3 available on the 64 at one point? Or am I just, like, imagining
No,
this?
I don't think so. Yeah.
All right, so 1998. Nintendo is back on top. Of course, The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time wins. No big surprise.
Some big games, though. I mean, StarCraft. It had some stiff competition. StarCraft, Half-Life, which, you know, so many people consider to be an iconic, incredible game.
Grim Fandango, which, by the way, Grim Fandango, you can play on Nintendo Switch, and I really want to talk about this game in a few weeks. It's freaking amazing. Our Nintendo editor, James Baker, who's been on the podcast before, I think it's his favorite game of all time. This was an amazing year for video games. Metal Gear Solid, Resident Evil 2, StarCraft, yeah. But, I mean, it's no surprise Ocarina of Time wins it.
Yeah, the game hasn't aged all that well, but it's still good.
Yeah, I'm with you, Isaac. I don't think it's aged all that well, but it is one of the single most iconic video games of all time. So a lot of people consider it the best game of all time. I personally don't, but I'm also a film guy that doesn't consider Citizen Kane the best film of all time. So there you have
analogy.
Well, analogy. The best video game of all time is Pac-Man, okay? So I'm not even joking. Well, sort of.
I'd put that game over Ocarina of Time.
But, oh, Miss Pac-Man is amazing. I can't wait to do the list for the 80s. 1999. Now, Nintendo does not win this year, but my favorite game, one of my favorite games of all time, my favorite game of the year, actually won. So I still come out a winner. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. Yes,
now,
I think it ran
away
with the votes.
We should mention, Nintendo didn't have a single nominee this year.
Nope.
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater did not come out on Nintendo 64. I think some of the sequels did, but I don't believe the original one did.
Yeah, and this was that gap year between when the 64 was obviously failing and they were going to release the GameCube the next year, or I'm sorry, 2 years from then, but they were going to announce it like that next year. And this is just a year where they're just kind of transitioning. It's kind of like, you know, 2016 was for the Wii U. You know, it's just one of those years where you're not going to have very many good games.
Right, but you see, guys, Nintendo might lose 1 year, but they're right back in it the next year because The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, Patrick's favorite game, takes the win.
I voted for Diablo, and I've never even played Diablo. I just didn't want to vote for Majora's Mask.
This is one of those years I did not vote. I've not played or beaten any of these games. I played a little bit of Majora's Mask, did not care for it. I've not beaten any of these games. And, you know, I just kind of didn't have anything to say, so I just didn't vote on it.
Really? You never played The Sims?
No, I mean, I'm not a Sim fan. I do not like simulating living somebody else's life. That's kind of like, I think that's kind of goofy in the same way Patrick was talking about the esports thing earlier. I mean, like, I can go live my own life. I don't need to simulate somebody else doing basic daily tasks that I can do myself. So,
I get what you're saying, but this version of The Sims, the one released in 2000, is very different than what we get nowadays. And, I mean, I'm not saying I would vote for it. I'm not saying I would vote for it over Majora's Mask, but it's a really good game for its time. It was released in 2000, so... but yeah, The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, you know, I don't know if it's because our website's named Goomba Stomp and most of our writers tend to like love Nintendo, but I would argue that most gamers tend to love Nintendo because most gamers start off playing Nintendo games, and Nintendo pretty much like has made some of the greatest games of all time. So, anyhow, so that brings us to 2000, and then Nintendo takes a hit moving forward. So in 2001, I'm kind of like shocked that Super Smash Bros. Melee didn't win.
Yeah, me too.
Not because Halo doesn't deserve it, but just because everyone on our staff loves Super Smash Bros. But no, Halo won.
Yeah, I voted for Melee. That game has long outlived. I mean, 18 years later, it's still got a thriving esports community, which is hilarious. And it's just a really good game. Now, it's not my favorite Smash like it is for a lot of people, but it's still a really good Smash Brothers game, and it's probably got the tightest controls of any of the Smash games. So
far, this is the year that split the most votes, too. You had five games receiving votes here, and I don't think any other year had that. The winners were fairly clear in the other years, but you had Devil May Cry getting a vote, you had Final Fantasy X getting a vote, you had Grand Theft Auto 3 getting a few votes, and, you know, Smash and Halo. So this really was, I think this one... kind of played to people's personal taste. There was no clear winner, and so people went with genre, I think.
So 2002, Nintendo's back. You see, like, Nintendo might lose out 1 year, but then they're right back the next year because Metroid Prime wins 2002 against such giants as The Elder Scrolls, Morrowind, and Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
I mean, what's there to say about Prime at this point? Everything's pretty much been said. Go read my articles if you want to see more about it. But it's a really, really good game. I mean, I love it. I grew up, this is one of my first games I ever got when I got my GameCube. I grew up with this game, and I think it's fantastic. I think it's aged very well. There's a lot of backtracking in it. You know, obviously, it hasn't aged very well in that regard. But graphically, this is the first generation where games start to look good even today. And I think this is just one of the impressive things for a rookie studio to pull off, because at the time, Retro Studios didn't have a really major development title under their belt, and they took one of Nintendo's most storied franchises and made just this incredible classic game out of it. If you haven't played it, play it, and if you have, go play it again. It's just a great game.
Yeah, maybe they should release it on Nintendo Switch, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
2003, Nintendo's back on the top, once again winning with The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. Of course, this I voted for the Wind Waker.
Clear victory game. This time. The competition wasn't very stiff in this one. You had Silent Hill 3, Soul Calibur 2, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, and Beyond Good and Evil. All good, very good games, but I don't think there wasn't really any it was a runaway victory for the Wind Waker.
Yeah, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic is pretty popular, but it seems like a lot of people over at Goombastomp.com, like Wind Waker is one of their top two Zelda games. Like, yep, a lot of people say, exactly, like a lot of people say Ocarina Wind Waker, Majora's Mask and Wind Waker, or Breath of the Wild and Wind Waker, but Wind Waker is always in the conversation with our staff.
And I think that's because we have a lot of people whose first console was a GameCube.
That, and this game has the best Ganondorf. I mean, Wind Waker Ganondorf is like the most relatable, best characterized sure. Ganondorf there is. And
he's almost sympathetic.
I mean, he is somewhat sympathetic. And, you know, when you have, I'm obviously not a Breath of the Wild fan, but, you know, compare those two games.
So your tonally, opinion should not be trusted.
So comparing these two games totally, I mean, Wind Waker just has a story that I really appreciated, even though it's not super in-depth. And it's just kind of, you know, enough to get you through, and it doesn't get in the way. And the art style is just beautiful. I mean, I've seen screenshots of it. I've never played it on Wii U, but I've seen screenshots of this game on Wii U, on the remake, and it's just fantastic.
Oh, my God. But don't you own a Wii U?
I own a Wii U, but I've never bought this game on Wii U.
Oh, you should. You really should. If you can get it, if you could get a discount on it, try to get it used. It's incredible. It's, like, hands down way better than the original. Like, if we were to actually rank the Zelda games and we were to consider the high-definition remake, I would put Wind Waker in the top three, hands down.
Yeah, they really they fixed some things to make that last, you know.
That last part was a grind in the original. I remember that.
They sped it up great, and it just looks absolutely stunning.
Good. Yeah. So 2004, there is no mention of any game released on a Nintendo console.
No, we were, they were absolutely left off.
I will say, I think I voted for WoW in this because I think WoW is one of the most, you know, influential games of all time. I mean, basically helped to completely redefine a genre. I mean, there's not an MMO today, for the most part, that hasn't taken at least some inspiration from WoW. And it's probably one of the most profitable games of all time. And I love the MMO genre in general. I put a lot of time into Final Fantasy XIV a couple of years ago. Go read the article about that. But it's just, I really think this was a groundbreaking game, even though I've never played it again. So.
Wait a minute. Wasn't Metal Gear Solid 3 on the GameCube?
It was on the 3DS. It was on
the 3DS.
Yep.
Okay, so there's one game, one of the nominees you can actually play on
years
Nintendo
later,
console.
Years later it appeared on the 3DS.
I think we're stretching it there.
Yeah.
Okay, but 2005, Nintendo is back. You see, they take a hit, but then the next year they come back strong because Resident Evil 4 ran away with the votes, which at the time was exclusive for a Nintendo console.
Mm-hmm. And of course, one of the greatest survival horror games of all time. I know, you know, some people think it got a little too actiony and it sent the series in the wrong direction, and there's a good argument to be made for that. But it was well balanced, even if its sequels weren't. And so it really is like it is the best Resident Evil game.
It is on my top five, if not top 10, video games of all time. And yep. We did an entire like 45-minute special on Resident Evil 4. So once again, check our archive over at Goombastomp.com. Like, if you look way back, just Google search it. Google search NXpress podcast Resident Evil 4. It's one of our best episodes we've ever done. And that was like way back in the day when we started the podcast, like probably like year one.
And this was another runaway victory. I mean, I think everybody's on the same page for this one.
Oh, you're talking about 2005 Resident Evil 4? Oh yeah, hands down. Yeah, for sure. But this was the biggest surprise for me. 2006.
Really?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I voted for Wii Sports. I'm just shocked that everyone else voted for Wii Sports.
Well, it was close. They were spread around again. The votes were spread out a little bit, but Wii Sports pulled out the victory.
Yeah, it's a great game.
When you look at the competition, you're like, Okami's a great game, but Wii Sports was Wii Sports. It sold the Wii. It made the Wii a phenomenon. It was like everybody was playing Wii Sports. It's one of the, like, sold like 82 million copies or something. It's
It made video games a sensation for the first time probably since the NES era. I think there was more hype around Wii Sports than there had been since Super Mario 3.
I don't know if you guys noticed a trend here. Nintendo's pretty much on top of each and every single one of these lists, like minus like maybe 2 years so far. And we're in 2006.
Yeah, we're making our way. We'll see if it keeps up.
2007. Guess who's on top, guys?
And there are some good games here. You know, I honestly thought Portal would get a few more votes and maybe even Mass Effect.
Come on, over Super Mario Galaxy. Galaxy takes the win in 2007 as the best game of 2007. Once again, Nintendo's on top, and I can't argue because Super Mario Galaxy is one of the greatest games ever made.
Yeah.
Arguably top three Mario games. So to me, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah, I have a funny story about Galaxy. When I was a kid, we were in a rural area, so we really didn't have internet growing up, besides like some occasional dial-up. I remember going to a GameStop one day, and there being like this poster of Mario in space. And I'm like, oh my goodness. I'm like, they put Mario in space. I'm like, that is just the coolest thing ever. And from that point on, I decided I wanted to play that game. And that's just always stuck with me. And I think that's why I enjoy that game in the Super Mario Galaxy series so much. It's just because of, it's just the wonder of Mario in space is just kind of neat. So.
2008 was not a good year for Nintendo.
Nope.
I don't think there's one nomination here that was released on a Nintendo console to date. Not even a port.
Nope. We did get a Dead Space spinoff on the Wii.
Yep, on Wii, yeah. I did not play any of these games.
Right, so. But it wasn't Dead Space. And so, even a game like Braid. Braid's never been, like, you figured they would release Braid on the Switch already. No, not released on Switch.
Yeah, Jonathan Blow, I don't think he's ever really, he's only released two games, but none of them have appeared on Nintendo consoles. So you had Braid, Dead Space, Fallout 3, Grand Theft Auto 4, which ended up winning by a single vote. It was a really close vote this year. And you had Little Big Planet and Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots.
So Nintendo is nowhere to be found on this list, not even in terms of nominees, and especially not the winner. 2009, not so great for Nintendo. Once again, not one of these games was ever released on a Nintendo console.
That is correct. We had Assassin's Creed 2, Batman Arkham Asylum, which Nintendo never got, but they did get the subsequent Batmans. You have Borderlands, League of Legends, Persona 4, and Uncharted 2.
I really enjoyed Batman
Arkham Asylum 1.
It's a really good game. Like, I really enjoyed playing that. It really nailed the feeling of Batman. And there was nothing, like, I've always enjoyed games like that. Just nothing. They make really beating up thugs really enjoyable.
What exactly is the feeling of Batman?
I mean, it's just like, you know, you just feel like you just go in and just whoop anybody. I mean, that's the feeling you got. Like, you sneak around a little bit, but when it's time to whoop it, you come out and you just whoop everybody. And that's the feeling they got with Batman on that. And that's what I enjoyed. I mean, just, you know, going up, you know, they were helping the people that were stuck in the asylum. The final boss is terrible in that game, but everything else, the pacing, the setting, you know, the everything else up, it's really, really good. The Scarecrow sequences, really good.
I liked Arkham City, the sequel. I played that on the Wii U, and I thought that was a fantastic game.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah, that's really good down the list.
So we're going to see a pattern. Once again, 2010, there's not one game, not one nominee.
The Wii is hurting.
There is one game, one nomination, that was eventually released on a Nintendo console, and that's Super Meat Boy, but... At the time, it was not available on any Nintendo console. Not right away.
Why isn't Galaxy 2 on 2010's list? Wasn't it released then?
So, that's a very good question, and you should send your hate mail to Mike Orby, managing games editor, because I argued that Super Mario Galaxy 2 should be on this list, and he said no, because it's pretty much the same sort of like game, and it didn't do anything groundbreaking, yada, 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 and I'm like, that's bullshit, because it was the best game of 2010.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I agree with Mike.
Come on, Galaxy 2 was I mean, GameSpot gave it a 10 back then. I was just impressed by that because they were always super critical of Nintendo games.
I like Galaxy 2 better than Galaxy 1.
Yeah, way better than Galaxy 1.
Yeah, no, I like except for the story. Galaxy 1 in every single way. I actually I stopped playing Galaxy 2 about 3/4 of the way through because I was utterly bored. And I wrote an entire article about how they probably shouldn't do direct sequels to Mario games anymore if this is what they're going to be like.
Wow, what a downer. From
totally
Patrick.
Disagree. I honestly think it's a way yeah, better game.
I could not disagree in more.
And I played it recently, like whenever we did our Mario, like your round spotlight, I played both games from start to finish, and I had the opinion that originally that Mario Galaxy was the better game, and after playing them again, back to back, for a second time, I realized that no, I was wrong, and Galaxy 2 is the better game. 2011. Guys, Nintendo's hurting right now. See, now this is the thing, like, if you're growing up, like, if you're younger and say, like, you start playing video games in the 2010s, I can understand why you're maybe not a huge Nintendo fan. Because once again, agreed. There's not one nominee here that was released on any, well, okay, we'll get to it, but not released on any Nintendo console at the time. Skyrim eventually got released on Nintendo Switch and Minecraft.
And
Rayman.
And Dark Souls.
And Dark Souls. Yeah, so all of these games eventually
Arkham City, Arkham City was on the Wii U a little bit later. Yeah. It was like a year or two later, right?
Yeah, that's
right. And Rayman Origins. Was that ever released on the
Wii? Yes.
Wii U. So basically, they all eventually got a release on Nintendo console, but at the time, none of them were available on Nintendo console, and Dark Souls 1.
Yeah, Arkham City is way better than Arkham Asylum. That's saying a lot. I really, really enjoyed Arkham City. With the added ability to fly between buildings and stuff, you really did feel like Batman. I mean, you're dropping off 20 stories in the air, landing on some guy's back, and just beating the fire out of some guys. And there's nothing more, you know, just cathartic than doing that.
And the Wii U is the console to play that on because it is like the whatever the definitive edition. Plus, the microphone in the Wii U gamepad is so cool when like Alfred's talking to you or some of your enemies are talking to you. And it actually feels like you've got a little communication system on there, and you've got all your, like, it's like you've got your belt there, all your systems on display on the Wii U gamepad while the game is up on the screen. I thought it was a really, really cool system, and sort of, it definitely helped immerse me more.
Yeah, I played on PS3, and I really enjoyed it. It's a great game, classic Batman game.
2012, I found this to be the year that had the weakest nominee.
Yep, that's, I'm so happy.
So, I mean, the Runaway Winners, I think your favorite game of all time, Xenoblade Chronicles.
Yes.
Hands down, it's the best game that was released that year.
It barely won. Every single game, this is the only year where every single game got a vote.
And yeah, The Walking Dead, right, Journey, Hotline, Miami, Far Cry 3, and Diablo 3.
To be fair, Xenoblade Chronicles was released in 2010 in Japan. So this is a
we
little bit...
We were going by North American release dates.
Yep, and so that helped a little, you know, it helped a little bit here because this was obviously the twilight of the Wii. But what I've said about Xenoblade before, I'll say it again, it's a really good game. It's only held back by the platform it's on. But it is a fantastic story, really good exploration, everything. It's a bit grindy in some places, but overall, it's just probably is my favorite JRPG of all time, my favorite game of all time. The story is really good. You know, usually used to JRPG silliness when you play a JRPG, but this one's really manages to nail the connections between the characters and the overall plot, and it's a little bit nonsensical. I don't think Patrick would enjoy it, but it's a really, really good game.
I tried it. I couldn't get past the thing where you have to link people together. There's like some boss fight where they're trying to teach you how to do something to stunt them or whatever. I could never do that. I did enjoy, however, the better game in that series, Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Heresy. Anyway.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what? If we had put it in 2010, I don't think it would have beat Mass Effect 2. No. So by having it in 2012, which is North American release date, it actually came out with the win. So
there you go.
So, up next, once again, I don't think there's any game here that was initially released on Nintendo console, although a few of these games you can play on Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, but isn't Brothers on Switch now?
Yeah, Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, which, by the way, is fantastic, is on Switch, and Gone Home is on Switch. But Dota 2, obviously not on Switch, Bioshock Infinite, Grand Theft Auto 5, and The Last of Us not on Switch. So, clearly The Last of Us wins, but once again, not a great year for Nintendo, because at the time, none of those games were available on any console. So this is 2013. I'm trying to figure out like when the Wii started like fizzing out. Because like,
well, the Wii was done at this point. The Wii U was coming into effect.
It wasn't 2013. Link Between Worlds when it came out.
I don't think we went. I don't think any. I don't even know if Mike. Check 3DS games, maybe not.
I asked them to include that game, and there was like a back and forth between the editors, and at the end of the day, they decided it just should not be on the list.
Yeah, it's a great Zelda game. I think it's one of the best, but I can see it not making a nomination. It's fine.
Definitely. Okay, I'm not upset that Wii Sport won, because like if you look at the nominees in 40 year, I think it makes sense that they won. But 2014, this is the one that really, really pisses me off.
Oh, come on.
Oh, come on. Bayonetta 2 is a way better game than Mario Kart 8.
No way. No way. Really? I love Mario Kart 8.
I love both those games, but I don't know, man. Mario Kart 8 is a phenomenal.
Fantastic. Well, Mario Kart 8 is just building off of the previous Mario Kart games in the series. Bayonetta 2 is just like, but it's just building off of it. Like it's way better. Yes, the graphics are better, the gameplay is better, everything about it is better. But the blueprint, like, it's already there. They just are building and improving what was already a success. Bayonetta 2 just like completely shocked everyone. And also, there is a nomination missing here because Super Smash Bros. Wii U is also not on this list.
Is it
which
not?
Is BS.
I did not realize that.
Yeah. No, and you know why? Because Mike did not want to put it on the list. And I was like, that's BS.
Shame
because
on you,
Super
Mike.
Smash Bros. Wii U was voted as the number one game on most websites that year.
Yep.
Followed by Mario Kart 8.
And let's see what else is on this list. We already listed Mario Kart 8 1, Bayonetta 2 was second, and barely anything even else got any votes. Divinity Original Sin, Hearthstone, Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare over Smash Brothers 4.
Oh my.
And Valiant Hearts The Great War, which honestly I've never heard of. I'm sure some people out there absolutely adore that game.
Indie game, right?
I don't even know what it is.
But point being, Mario Kart 8, I put almost 200 hours into that game. It is a fantastic game, nearly perfect controls, beautiful on Wii U, even more beautiful on Switch. And I mean, if you look at Mario Kart 7 and you look at Mario Kart 8, you're like, oh my goodness, they really bumped the series up a lot. You know, Mario Kart Wii was pretty weak, I thought. Mario Kart 7 was pretty weak. Mario Kart 8 just took everything to a whole new level. And
I'm still upset that the Super Smash Bros. For Wii U is not on this list.
That was a great game.
I mean, I would love to see if Super Smash was on this list, would Mario Kart 8 win?
Nope.
I doubt it.
I totally would have voted for Smash over Mario Kart.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. This is incorrect. This is incorrect because the nominations weren't done properly.
A matter of opinion, but you know.
No, but at the end of the day, Mike chose to not put Smash on the list based on his own bias, and that's not fair because everyone else was saying Smash should be on the list just because he doesn't play fighting games.
Brawl should be on this
list
too.
Come on. Hearthstone, maybe Divinity Original Sin, like Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare.
That one I don't get.
Super
that one
Smash Brothers
or Valiant Hearts, which is, Valiant Hearts. I've seen it one time on like the eShop. I've never heard of that game otherwise.
Maybe it's great. I mean, I'm not going to discount Valiant Hearts. I've never played it, never seen it. So that's my own ignorance right there. And maybe it's an amazing game, but Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare. That's the one that sticks out for me. Is how did that make it over Smash 4? I don't know. That one I don't know.
That is the only year in which I'm upset. And it's not about the winner so much as about the fact that the nomination, that Smash did not get a nomination, and therefore Mario Kart 8, I guarantee you, will not win. 2015, once again, there is
I'm surprised.
There's no games here that were released initially on Nintendo console, although now you can play Undertale, Rocket League, and Life is Strange.
And soon, The Witcher 3.
And you will be able to play The Witcher 3, yes.
Yep.
Yes, exactly. So
through Black Magic, because there's no way that game should be running on Switch.
Wait a minute, who won?
Bloodborne ultimately won, and that's what surprised me, because The Witcher 3 was, everybody just loved that game. And I know, we have a lot of Dark Souls Bloodborne fans on the site. I'm just still kind of surprised that The Witcher 3 didn't win. It was close. It was only by one vote, but still kind of surprised. This was another one where the votes were spread out, though, quite a bit. You know, everybody got
one. The Witcher 3 should have won, but, I mean, I'm not upset Bloodborne wins, but I voted for Witcher 3. 2016, once again, we do have a Nintendo game.
Finally, we have a Nintendo game back.
Well, we just had a Mario Kart 8 just won in 2014. So it's only one year that Nintendo doesn't appear on the list. Pokemon Sun and Moon.
Is on the list.
Why is it on this list? Why is it on this list?
Well,
why is this game on this list?
Maybe going over the list of everything, maybe 2016 was a weak year. So we should list off, there's Final Fantasy 15, Inside, Overwatch, Persona 5, Pokemon Sun and Moon, and Uncharted 4 Thief's End. So those are our nominees.
Yeah, so you have one of the greatest action-adventure games ever made. You have Overwatch, which kind of like just blew everyone away. Yeah, for people
love
that
game.
Mania.
Games, yeah.
Fantastic.
You have Inside, which I think is a masterpiece, which, by the way, is available on Nintendo Switch.
Final Fantasy 15, huge,
whatever. Huge,
long-awaited game.
Yeah, we waited
just
for
like,
that, like...
You got Persona
5,
which everyone fell in love with and put in like 250 plus hours, and then you have Pokemon Sun and Moon. I don't get it. Like, why is Pokemon Sun and Moon here?
What about Inside? Like, is that
a good
game?
It got
Inside is a masterpiece. Like, it is incredible. Yeah, it is such an amazing game.
No other Pokemon game, many of which are far more popular in the Pokemon community, no other Pokemon game made it even as a nominee on this list other than the original Red Pokemon Red and Blue. No Gold, Silver, or, you know, whatever. All those games didn't make it. No XY, nothing.
Because you know why? Pokemon's a stupid, stupid video game series.
No, it's good. I'm much more on board with that.
Harsh words. I don't play the series at all.
Pokemon is a video game series for babies, for kids.
I will.
We just lost like
shots
half of
fired. Yeah. Bad Tim's not on here, Terry.
I enjoyed. You didn't play the latest Pokemon Let's Go. That was fun. I liked that. All right, 2017. All right, so this one was really tough for me because of I ultimately had to go with my brain, and my heart was pulled in two different directions for this one, but my brain knew that one was the correct answer. Cuphead, Horizon Zero Dawn, Resident Evil 7, Super Mario Odyssey, Hollow Knight, and The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Obviously, it was a blowout victory for Breath of the Wild, but there was a part of me that wanted to vote Hollow Knight because I do think that is going to be on my top 10 greatest games of all time.
I still don't see the appeal of Breath of the Wild, even to this day. I don't understand why people like it. I could not get sucked in by this game. The story, I did not like the story, honestly, and the exploration for me was fun. I really actually did enjoy that part, but without a story to motivate me. I mean, even the kind of, you know, silly stories they have in Zelda games, it just wasn't enough for me. I really liked Mario Odyssey. It wasn't as good as the previous 3D Mario games, but I did enjoy it. And that's why I put it as my top one for this year.
So I put 200 hours between the two games on this list, just two of them. That's not including Odyssey, which I might have put. I put 200 hours into Breath of the Wild. And as of now, because I was recently, right before I bought Fire Emblem, I was replaying Hollow Knight again. I have a total of 115 hours in Hollow Knight. So over 300 hours between those two games. It was really hard to choose.
Well, and also, like, on this list, like, Cuphead, Hollow Knight, and, of course, Super Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild are all available on the Switch. So 4 out of 6 games are available on the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
So it's like, a big year for Nintendo. So, like, we're at 2017, and really there was only, like, I would say, like, a span of about 3 years where Nintendo didn't really have any nominations or wins. But Nintendo pretty much is dominating this whole entire list. If Pokemon Sun and Moon actually won, then I can understand people just, like, hating our website and saying we would just let any Nintendo game take the prize because, like, I still don't understand why it's a nominee. And, you know, like, Pokemon Sun and Moon came out in 2016. Do you know how many great games came out in 2016? We posted a list on our website, and we were supposed to do, like, a list of, like, the 20 best games, and we stretched it to 35 because there were so many great games.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd put that one up there, but we did, so there you go.
So 2018.
Robbed. I will say robbed on this one.
I did not know. Okay, that's interesting. So yeah, so there's one game on this list. Oh, two games on this list that are on the Nintendo Switch. Mm-hmm. They are, of course, Celeste and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. But the winner is neither. Yeah.
So ultimately, we also had Monster Hunter World, Red Dead Redemption 2, which I am surprised only received one vote. And we had Spider-Man, which had no votes. This was a very good year, by the way. Like, a lot of these games were just people. But the winner was ultimately God of War, the sort of the reboot of that franchise, which, Rick, I know you loved that game quite a lot, right?
Yeah, I voted for God of War.
Yeah.
Hands down. It's, like, now that I've, you know, I've gone back and, like, I finished God of War. Of course, I finished Spider-Man. I've played a bit of Red Dead. Kind of scared to actually purchase it because it's just so time-consuming. And, of course, Super Smash Bros. The only, and Celeste, I love Celeste. The only game on this list that I haven't played is Monster Hunter World. But I really do think God of War deserves the win here. As much, like, see, the thing is that I think that this whole entire list, right, all three decades would be perfect if Mike had put Super Smash Bros. For Wii U on the list. That would have taken the win back in, what was it, 2014. And then I would have been okay with Super Smash Bros. Ultimate not taking the win in 2018.
It wasn't a remake. I don't mean that. But Ultimate is very close to Wii U in many ways.
In a lot, like not technically, but like in terms of general style, yes, it is very close.
Yeah.
Like the mechanics of it obviously are very different. But obviously, I think Ultimate should won this. But I've never played a single other game on this list besides Ultimate. So.
And by the way, I'm going to take that completely back. I don't know Smash Brothers well enough to know whether it's close or not. You're right. It's just close in the way that it looks, and I think that may have swayed some of the voting.
To be fair, it has some of the like less impressive single player content in Smash history. So, I mean, that's probably the biggest knock against it. But in terms of mechanically, Smash has never felt so good and played so well.
Here's my closing comment on this list. What I realize is that there are some years where the PlayStation 1 or the Xbox or whatever system will have more great games to purchase, right? Like, let's say, like, 2015, like, PlayStation has 15 must-play games and Nintendo had, like, 3. But if you look at this list, what you notice is that Nintendo always has like 1, 2, or 3 of the best games of the year most often. And so for me, that's why it's always been a must to have a Nintendo console. Like if I buy the N64 on that very first year, it was like they were hurting. There was like Pilot Wings and there was Super Mario 64 for like 9 months. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it didn't matter because it came with Super Mario 64.
That's
and
right.
You had to have an N64. That's the thing about Nintendo.
And you could play that game for 9 months.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this just further cements to me personally that like my favorite two platforms are the PC and the Nintendo console that's out. Because that allows me to play a lot of multi-platform games on my PC and play all the exclusives on the Nintendo console and kind of get the best of both worlds in that regard. For my personal tastes, at least.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think you guys should check out the list, and we've written some capsules for each one of the games, and sort of explains why it's such a great game. So check that out when it's published, which should be anytime now. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the games we've been playing and kind of wrap the show up. All right. We'll see you in a bit. Try to be best, 'cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. All right, everybody, welcome back. We're going to wrap this show up really quick. We're going to talk a little bit about what we've been playing and what we've been doing in the world of video games. Isaac, I know you've been kind of quiet on this because you watched two movies and that took up most of your time.
No kidding.
So obviously, if you listened last week, we talked about Fire Emblem. I was only about 25 hours in, I believe, at the time of the recording of that. I'm now about closer to 45 hours in. I have been playing that game a ton. It has not slowed down for me at all. It's one of the quickest 45 hours I've ever put into a game. It's highly addictive. I still recommend anybody who is on the fence about this one, because I was on the fence about this one even when I bought it. If you are into that kind of stuff, if you're into, you know, RPGs and sort of strategy games, I think this is a knockout. We just listed the best games for each year. I guarantee this is going to end up on some people's best of the year lists. I don't know how high it's going to go, but I definitely would include it as a nominee for one of the best games of 2019. I can guarantee it's going to be on there. It's that phenomenal, I think, that addictive. Yeah, so that's what I've been doing, and that is what I will be doing most likely for the rest of this month, because this game actually has to be, believe it or not, guys, so I'm really taking my sweet time. A lot of people have finished this in around 50, 60 hours. I've read that some people have done it in 30, although I don't know how that's possible, but maybe they're just really good at this game. I'm taking my sweet time. It's going to be probably closer. I'm halfway through right now, exactly, so I'm going to be closer to 90 hours for a playthrough. I am actually considering, there are four different paths to take. I'm considering doing at least one or two more after I play this one. It has me that interested, and the stories apparently are that much different that I really want to know what's going on in the other houses and how their kind of part plays in this story.
I wouldn't plan on playing this game, but the way everybody keeps talking about it makes me want to play it.
I just, it creates characters that are so vivid, and I'm kind of surprised at how protective I have become of my characters, and how I originally thought when I entered this game that I would be starting out doing everything manually, like instructing them and everything like that and manipulating their stats, but eventually just letting it automate, because you have that option. You can automate all the teaching, and you don't really even have to do anything at the school if you don't want to. You can skip it all and just go straight to the battles. And the battles do pick up quite a bit when you get in, because there start to become paralogues, and there are all sorts of different, you know, quest battles that you can do. So I am fighting quite a bit. A good chunk of my time is now spent on the battlefield, but I still love the school parts, and I have not even thought for a second about automating any of the teaching. I like controlling every aspect of my students' sort of aspirations. You know, I like, you know, guiding them along to a certain class. I'm finding it very, very rewarding, which I'm absolutely shocked by, because that is typically just not something I have any patience for in video games whatsoever. I typically just want to get to the battles and the meat. But I consider that now to be just as much of the meat of this game as the battles. And they, for whatever reason, it's just all jiving with me super well. I love exploring the monastery. I do every single side quest. I mean, it's one of those games that's turning into kind of a, for me, like a Breath of the Wild sort of, I need to do everything. And of course, you cannot 100% a game like this with one playthrough, because they will not allow you to, you know, you're just never going to be able to make friends with everybody and see all the support conversations with all the characters, because it's just never going to happen with one playthrough. You don't have time. And I think that's one of the more interesting things about this game is, you know, time is often present in video games, like a ticking clock or day-night cycles. But this one actually has consequences of time, meaning there are things you cannot do. You choose to do one thing instead of the other thing, and you cannot go back. That's it. That day's over. You've done this thing, and there's no going back from there. You don't. You can't second guess your choice. Sure, you could save on a different file and try it out, but you'll still have to pick one or the other. You will never be able to do everything. And I kind of enjoy that. It keeps me really, really engaged in the day to day activities of this game. So anyway, I could go on for forever about it. I think Matthew and I last week talked quite a bit, and maybe when I finish the game, I'll end up talking more about it, but for right now, yeah, just absolutely, that's going to fill my month until Astral Chain comes along.
I have a question. I really, really, really want to play this game. I'm just broke, and there's a reason why I'm broke, which I'll get to soon. But in this game, like, do you have to romance people? Like, do you have to have sex with people? Because I just don't understand. I keep seeing these headlines pop up on my news feed, like, romancing in Three Houses. I'm like, what kind of video game is this? I don't want to, like, romance anyone in a video game.
No, okay. First of all, so romance, again, I have not played a ton of Fire Emblem games. I only played one, actually, in the past, and that was Awakening, and I only played it for a little bit. And romance and getting married and having kids was a big part of that game, and I guess it was in Fates as well. It is not a big part of this game, romance. And first of all, you cannot, there is nothing, like, halfway through the game, it's barely flirting. Barely. Maybe.
Because you're playing with kids, right?
What?
There's like, what? These are kids? Like, teenagers?
It's like, you got to consider it like university. These are like university students. And you are the same age as them, and they make that very apparent at the beginning, because they have no respect for you because you're a contemporary of theirs. They're like, why are you our professor? You're the same age as us. So there's not an age difference. You're not like the old wise professor, you know, preying on the younger students. But they're university age. A lot of these people are getting ready to take over the throne.
Whoa, wait. You play as a professor and you have to romance your students?
No, you do not have to. Okay, well, let me get to this. First,
but romance, you can?
Romance is, no, you can't, actually. Okay. There are a couple of conversations where they give you flirtatious responses, but there is no romance. You never go out on a date. There's never anything happening. There's absolutely nothing. Like, there's no there's no physical contact with these people other than fighting training. You'll get that in some of the cutscenes where they train together. But yeah, that there is no real romance. Now, I guess at the I don't think this is a spoiler, because I think most people know this, but I guess that you can ultimately at the very end of the game marry somebody, but it will be at the very end of the game. And you have to also remember, and Nintendo made this clear, so I don't think I'm spoiling anything here, but in case you just stop listening for about 30 seconds, there is a time shift where the story jumps ahead many years. So everybody's a little bit more grown up by then. And so apparently at the very end, if you want to, you can marry somebody. You have to have a certain level of, like, a certain relationship with them. It's called support, a level of support with them. And that just means having one-on-one conversations.
This is so bizarre. Is it like an arranged marriage? Like, do you just have a bunch of people stand in front of you and just choose?
No. You have to build this. Rick, I can't explain it to you. Like, I could explain it to you if I went into detail. The relationships you build in this, it's very interesting, because the way support is built is you have to answer questions correctly. You have to do quests for people, but you do have to really maintain your relationships. You have to fight together on the battlefield. You just establish kind of a bond between characters. And it's not just between the main character and the others. It can be between all the NPCs. They're not NPCs because you control them in the battle, but all the students interact with each other as well and have support conversations with each other and support levels with each other. So there's a bunch of relationships being established. So some of the most interesting ones don't involve my avatar, the professor. They involve two students who end up having their own storyline together. And as their support levels build, you unlock more and more conversations between them that reveal their characters and their relationship with each other. And I'm finding those to be some of the most interesting ones. Now, I don't know if any of them are going to pair off. I have no idea. I don't know story wise what's going to happen. I just know that in the end, you can choose to marry somebody if your support level with them is maxed out, I believe. So you have to really work for it, but it's never, I want to stress this. It is not a big part of this game. It is not in your face at all. In fact, it's very subtle most of the time. You're just trying to build relationships with these people, not romance them. That's not what's happening here.
Yeah, if it's anything like it was in previous Fire Emblem games, it's just kind of a side thing.
It's not even close to that. Like, from
really? It's even lesser than that.
Yeah, it's barely there. It is barely there. Like I said, the most you ever get is a little, it's not even obvious flirting for the most part. It's just a little bit of very casual, like maybe one line here or there, and somebody go, oh, really? And it's just like, and then it's gone, right? And they'll be like, let's talk about what we were talking about.
And that's so interesting for a Fire Emblem game. They've been a little bit more focused on the relationship aspect before.
Yeah, so this is a very, very small element of your support conversations, and that is not necessarily the goal in support conversations. They instead have really just focused on having very elegant backstories for these characters, and make you want to see what they're going to do in the future. The romance element, like I say, it's almost non-existent, and if you don't want it, you never have to even come close to it if you don't want to.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So they made a game in which you have to go back to school and you can maybe sort of flirt with people, but you'll never have a chance to actually date anyone or marry anyone.
Yeah, not until well after the time shift that, you know, and it'll be years later.
That sounds really depressing.
No,
what happens if you bond with a character that you really like, or your character likes? Like, hopefully you don't like the character, but your character.
Well, I already know who I'm going to marry, by the way. I know exactly who I'm going to marry. I've already.
What if your character dies?
What's that?
But what if she dies, though?
Well, then that's part of the.
That's okay, depressing.
First of all, Fire Emblem, you can play it two different ways, three houses, just like you could with Awakening and Fates, is you can play on casual mode so that instead of dying on the battlefield, they retreat from the battlefield, so they'll still be there. That's kind of their version of easy mode. So the battles are still as hard. Like, the difficulty level doesn't change, but you just don't lose your character. So if you wanted to kamikaze somebody, you could, and know that they'll still be there. Like, if you're just not that great at strategy, I can tell you this.
Easier.
Here's the thing. Classic mode, they will die. And yeah, if you're romancing them, Rick, they're gone, man. Like, that's it. Sorry, that relationship didn't work out. But casual, they'll always be there. And I am playing on casual, but I will say this. I'm halfway through the game, and I'm playing as if I'm on classic. There is a rewind feature on the battlefield that you can do a very limited number of times. So you want to save it for the right times. I have used it twice because a character got killed. Once because I was being overly aggressive because I wanted to get the loot that this super strong bad guy that I was fighting too early had. And the second time, because I was careless and I let somebody, I exposed one of my characters to a guy with a sword and he destroyed her. But so I've used it twice. You can rewind back as many steps as you want, as many moves as you want, and then redo your moves so that you don't make that stupid mistake that you just made.
But when you play classic mode, do you have the rewind feature as well?
Yes.
Okay, so
but again, it's limited. It's like twice you can do it.
So like only twice in life can you turn back time.
I mean, you can do it twice per battle. So and that's all explained. That's all explained, by the way, because there's story elements involved in that. But so if you play it, you'll understand why the professor can turn back time a brief number of times. But it basically lets you. You know, because what people were essentially doing is they would just restart the battle anyway. A lot of people, if they lost a character, they would just restart the battle and play out all their moves until they made it to the point where they made a mistake and then do something different. This just eliminates that needless restart, right?
Okay, so my last question.
Yeah.
Sorry, my last question. Can you just flirt with, like, everyone because you're not entirely sure who you want to marry at the end of the game? Oh, okay.
Yes, you can.
You can flirt.
And you can flirt with any gender, too. So you can do whatever you want. Like, I don't think...
Now I'm going to flirt with everybody. In case. You never know.
Not every character will flirt with you, I guess I should say. Not every character will flirt with you. And it's pretty much you're limited to your house. Or whatever characters are in your house. You can talk to everybody else and you can recruit them, and then once you recruit them maybe you can flirt with them, but I've never gotten to that level with I've recruited like three people, but that we're not to the support level where they would ever flirt with me. And I from what I understand, there are some characters who will not flirt with the same gender, but there are many that will. So yeah, I don't know. It's you can try with everybody though. I mean you know what you can do? There's a handy list. So when you open up the characters, you can see how far the support level conversations go. So support levels that go from C, B, A, S, you know, all the way up to S, essentially. So if you have an S rank, I believe you can eventually, if you want to, marry that person. But not every character has an S support level with every other character. So some characters only go up to B, some only go up to A. And so you won't be able to actually marry that person.
But the end goal of this game isn't to get married. Like that's not really what the story's about. The only reason why I bring this up is because I keep seeing these headlines pop up on my newsfeed, on my Facebook newsfeed, or on my Twitter newsfeed, and it's like all of these articles just talking about romancing. I'm like, what the hell is this game about?
Because
it's a game about war.
People love that stuff. For some reason, a lot of people love that stuff. Look, I'll admit there's a fun aspect to it that like. Because you're basically like, ooh, you're the belle of the ball. You've got your choice from all these different people, right? And if you build up your support conversation, it's just kind of a stupid thing. Because, you know, here's the thing. Flirting in video games, I always find to be hilarious because it's usually pretty bad. It's rarely ever witty, just like in real life, I guess. And right? So I find it hilarious. I don't find romance to be entertaining, but I do think that flirting can sometimes make for funny dialogue.
Well, what I always like to do in the previous Fire Emblem games was not get married myself, but play matchmaker. So if I thought two characters would be good together, I'd place them together in battle and have them, you know, get a couple battles together and then get them married. So
And you know, that again, that component isn't really in place here. There is going to be, I don't know if any of the students are ever going to get together. I have no idea. Like, but I know that actually marrying them off and having children, like you could, and then those children, you can recruit them later on in the other Fire Emblem games. That is not present here at all.
Yeah.
They really, really, they really scaled back on the romance stuff from what I understand. So, it barely forms a part of your day, Rick. Like it is something that pops up every once in a while and they're like, ooh, you know, you can, Some character will say something dumb to you, like, oh, professor, you know, do you really look at me that way or something like that?
And
you can answer yes or no. You can be like, oh, my God, of course not. Or you can say, well, maybe I do. You know, there's all sorts of dumb responses. And it's kind of fun to tell you the truth. And like I say, I've already picked out. I know exactly. Like I have zeroed in on one character. And hey, man. Why not? I'm going to try to experience everything this game has to offer. And there's a lot it has to offer.
And so you could only marry someone in your house.
I believe so. As somebody could correct me, write in and correct me if I'm wrong on that one. It's possible that if you can recruit people from other houses to your house, so then they become your students. So it is possible that you could recruit somebody and then form some kind of relationship with them. Yes, I would imagine.
Interesting. Anyhow, yeah,
why did we spend
really
so long talking about this?
We really went to the room. Well, you know, Matthew and I didn't really get into the romance stuff, so I guess this was at least a different discussion. But yeah, anybody, it's not. Don't worry, it's not like an overriding thing. It's not a major component in the game. It's barely even a minor component in the game. It's only there if you want it to be there, and you can absolutely. I bet there are people who have no idea that it's even there, or can barely perceive that it's even there. So anyway, that's Fire Emblem Three Houses. It also contains a lot of great strategy fighting and just a lot of cool RPG stuff, guys.
Sounds like I would like that. I love the strategy games. So.
And this is just, I think it's an absolute blast. I think every facet of this game is firing on all cylinders for me.
Cool.
It's definitely going to go. It very well could end up being my game of the year. I mean, obviously there's some great games left to come out, but this could be my game of the year. Anyway, Rick, you also had something to talk about.
Well, I haven't been playing a lot of video games for two reasons. Number one, I've been covering the Fantasia Film Festival for about 4 weeks now, which is, you know, a long time to be covering a film festival, watching like up to 3 movies a day and writing about them and editing. And also, my cat decided to give birth in the video game room, so I can't really play video games right now and disturb her. And that's going to be like that for about 4 weeks. So I can still play the Switch. This is the beauty about the Switch, guys. I can take the Switch on the go, right? So I can play handheld. But for like about 4 weeks, I'm not really going to be playing video games in the video game room because she needs her privacy. So I have been reading, however, The Legend of Zelda Encyclopedia. Now, yeah. You guys know about this book. It came out last year. This thing is a beast. And I just want to say thank you to Fun.com, who sent me The Legend of Zelda Encyclopedia, which I think is valued at $90, if I'm not mistaken, at least Canadian dollars. It's like super expensive.
Wow.
And you guys have seen this book. Like, it is enormous. It is like 325 pages of information that any hardcore Zelda fan would want to get their hands on. Like, they left no stone unturned. It is a beast. The artwork is beautiful. There's just like, by the way, the only drawback, though, clearly because the game was released right around the time Breath of the Wild was released, it only goes up until Twilight Princess. So there is a little bit about Breath of the Wild towards the end, but they don't really break it down like the way they do with the previous games. But they actually sent me the deluxe edition. The reason why I wanted the deluxe edition, well, I didn't ask them, they just happened to send me the right one, is because it looks like an old NES cartridge. It actually looks like the original gold NES cartridge for the original Legend of Zelda. It's massive. It has an actual like booklet that sort of looks like an instruction booklet that comes with it. This thing is just like, I mean, it's a beast. Like, I'm sure most of our listeners already know that this book exists, but I'm just letting you know that I actually have my hands on it and I'm looking through it. And it's not just one of those books that you put on your coffee table just when people come over, they like flick through the pages and that's it. And it's like, it's done its job. You're actually going to want to read this damn thing. There's so much information. There's one tidbit, which is like the archives, and it's like probably my favorite section of the book because it has this like, you know, just strange information, strange facts that you would not know about specific games. Like, you know, everybody, well, I don't know if everybody knows this, but like the fact that David Lynch was inspired to make Twin Peaks because he played like Link's Awakening back in the days on the Game Boy, like little things like that.
Wait, the other way around, right? Link's Awakening was inspired by Twin Peaks.
You're right. Yeah, yeah. Anyhow, everyone knows that this book exists. It is fantastic. It's packed with concept art, screen caps, maps, character bios, everything you could possibly want in a Zelda encyclopedia. So I highly recommend picking it up if you can afford it, or it'll make a great Christmas gift for one of your friends or family members. Once again, I have to say thank you to Fun.com. It's always great when you just get something mailed to you just randomly. And I'm going to be writing a little bit of an article about it. Sort of like a review. So just head over to Goombastomp.com if you want more information about it.
Yeah, and hopefully post some pictures of it or whatever. I think it would be fun to just randomly get something like that in the mail. Maybe someday I will. Well, that should do it for today's show. Like Rick said, we're going pretty long here, so we're just going to wrap this up really quick. Isaac, thanks for coming on and talking list with us. Where can we find you online?
Find me over at Goombastomp.com.
Excellent. Yes, and you can check out all the articles Isaac has written there, including the series he recently wrapped up on the tech for Nintendo's consoles, which is a very, very fascinating read if you're into that sort of thing. Even if you're not, actually, which I'm not particular, and I still found it fascinating. All right, Rick, where can we find you?
You can find me over at Goombastomp.com. I'm doing a lot of writing these days. On Twitter, it's Goombastomp. Like us on Facebook. We're all over social media. And if you like our show, support us by leaving a rating. And once again, I apologize. I'm like super sick, guys. Hopefully it'll be better next week. But hopefully Tim will be back next week.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't host as well as Tim. But anyway, I am Patrick Murphy, of course, and you can find me online at goombastomp.com, writing lots of articles. Check out our Fantasia Film Festival coverage. Seriously, there's a ton of it. And there were some really, really good movies, I thought, there. Brick, I know you thought it wasn't maybe the best festival ever, but there still were quite a few good ones that you might want to catch if you ever get the chance. And you can also find me on Twitter at Sorted Cinema. Like Rick said, be sure to give our program a rating. It really helps us out. All right, we'll be back next week, probably with more Fire Emblem. Anyway, we'll talk to you guys later.